This program is brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you like what you hear and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.
Repeat after me. Our Father, whose art's in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Unless things change, thy kingdom come and gone, thy will be undone on earth as it isn't heaven. Give us this day our daily bread at least three times a day, and lead us not into temptation too often on weekdays, but deliver us from evil, whose presence remains unexplained in thy kingdom of power and glory. Oh, man.
You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net. And we've got Bob Parks in the studio to do our Christmas special. Good afternoon, Bob.
Hello there.
So you're going to do, first of all, you've prepared, what is it, a poem or a rap? Or
a rap.
Something? It's a rap.
Rap, read like a poem.
Okay.
But I can then do it, get music behind it and all that, so it's in its initial state.
Okay.
And well, it links in with the Faust. Faust notebooks, and there's a particular track to see how the instrumentation would go. But this is
that what you would prefer to have over underlaid or overlaid? Is it Faust?
No. The setting, the way it's structured, is the thing to use as a springboard into the thing. I won't look at you. Right, look at the phone. Yeah, I get it.
All right.
Okay, go on.
Go on then.
All right, here we go. Williams rap. Computers subvert confidence. Let me hear it now. Computers subvert confidence. At this Christmas time, when we go online, remember, computers subvert confidence. At this time of year, when the truth comes near, computers subvert confidence. Did it happen to you? Have you been born anew? Computers subvert confidence. Just remember, computers subvert confidence. What you have most to lose when you self-abuse, computers subvert confidence. At that time of success, when you want to express, computers subvert confidence. Computers subvert confidence. I'll say it again and again and again. Computers subvert confidence. Keep your pecker up and don't be fooled. You're only sitting with something that's been made. Computers subvert confidence. Computers subvert confidence. Hans Dinsky, the anthropologist, studied the Finno-Uric shamanic tradition. Computers subvert confidence. Sibelius, who was also a dandy, fell silent when he got older. Computers subvert confidence. Kay's hard edge abstraction lost his Murnau's spirituality. With the drum, computer talk. Computers subvert confidence. In their own ways, 1917, following independence, apocalyptically, they left the world. Computers subvert confidence. Because of what beckoned, computers subvert confidence. Through fascism to Silicon Valley. Maybe it still has some bite to give the world a fright. Computers subvert confidence and take it back to where we lost sight of love. Power equals energy over time. Power through money gives force ideas. Energy through computers gives human enthusiasm. Confidence. Time through potential gives spirituality insight. Ideas equal confidence divided by insight. Computers subvert confidence.
Thank you, Bob. Are you having trouble with computers at the moment? Or?
No, it's just the idea. No, I think it's quite a... an affirmation of computers, but I'd have to unpick what I did. Essentially, I had I didn't have this intention in writing it, but it's the way it's turned out. So there's a repetitious part,
yeah.
But gradually, the meaning of it comes through to pretty close. I use the example of taking a physics formula, which is power equals energy over time. Or is it time over it? Yeah, energy over time. And can't get that wrong. And then just breaking it down was, with the take, like an artistic take on it, was similar to what, say, Suzanne. Let's go back to where it came from. Let's not start out a sibling. Suzanne started the idea of breaking down the surface and, well, questioning it. And which led to cubism. So it's a sort of a cubist take on that, the physics idea. So it's like an art take on the science given. And it's a bit of a sort of exchange. So what I've done is I've picked out various strands and then the links in between those strands. And then, so it's primary, secondary, and tertiary. And I've linked the tertiary directly back with the primary. And so from the primary, which is the equation, and my substitution go back to the primary, which is the physics equation. Its tertiary is the artistic outcome, sort of via the secondary. So what I've done is made that like... a logical, like an Aristotelian syllogistic logic. Only it's not really, but only it's sort of visually. So what it's, brought in light on the same level is, it's brought the words, ideas, confidence, and insight. I wouldn't, ever thought of bringing those three words together, but it's brought them together. And then how that came about was, I've just had a 5-week show at a West End gallery the Gallery of Everything, which has produced a lot of very valuable exposure. And we didn't have any sales, so there was no pickup on it.
Right.
So, but what I've gained was confidence. And that's priceless, I suppose, but that's the outcome of it. And then immediately I go on a computer and you've pressed the wrong button. This is wrong. These categories. It's when it speaks categorically, the way the computer talk, categorical computer talk, is often inaccurate.
Right.
And it's not in life. So all my confidence got completely shattered. Went to the computer and I thought, what's gone on? What's happened to all of that?
Have you ever had one of those images where you get like a sad face? You get this sort of thing, it's like a logo or icon of disappointment.
Yeah.
And it's like, it seems to be saying to you, you've done something really sad.
Something that, like your mother's death, which comes into the movie or something like that,
right.
is of that order.
Yeah.
And it's that sort of starkness.
And there's no way through it.
No,
somehow.
You can either
the
accept it or not.
The computer is saying this is, and there's something terribly patronizing in a way about the computer showing a sad face as though you've kind of, it's you that's made the mistake somehow, or you are lacking in something.
Exactly. So that's why I say my repetitive phrase, computers subvert confidence.
Right.
So my take on it is, and this is it, can I link it in with the book I've just read?
Yeah.
The book is called Surfing Uncertainty. And it's when, as I said, did I say it here? I said it somewhere anyhow. When you're a bit of a loss what to do, where you end up is always at the cognitive philosophy section of Foyles, which is where I ended up, just to touch base again.
Yeah.
And this book was available. And roughly, it's the idea that we're a bit, another book I read said that the inevitability of a Tory government for the rest of a foreseeable future anyhow.
Yeah.
It will now be accompanied, though, with this ongoing uncertainty. It's not just Toryism, but it's Toryism of an uncertain nature. So we've got to learn how to work with uncertainty. And the point this book makes is that we have this ability to predict. And there's a science emerging. I think it's still on a theoretical level, because it came in a book on philosophy. It might be a bit further than that. But he says that, out of this... a prediction processing, and the idea is that the bottom up or bottom top down from mind, so bottom up with the mind is what we see and our senses, and top down, I suppose, something like dreams. And apparently, as sensate beings, we err towards the top down part of it. So in that sense, life is more a controlled hallucination than it is a perceptual experience, although it's got elements of that. Now, this is a take on top of things, like we're talking in a radio program. It's basically Loki Baird or whoever discovered it. We wouldn't be as real people, we would just be talking to each other, but this is like a one remove from reality, or doing a painting is one remove because it's just in your imagination, or if you're an actor and portraying a part in a character in a play, it's not real, you're just doing it out of your imagination. So it's in that sense, coming back from Los Angeles, this is running over things, but very briefly, I got obsessed with process. And essentially process is thinking about thinking. So on that level, one other thing, can I say? One other thing that links in. Okay. The other thing is, there happened to be a program on television, on radio, BBC 4, on... behavior, no, it's with neuroeconomics, and out of that was behavioral economics, which was a sub. The guy who was essentially a psychiatrist got a Nobel Prize in economics from what he found. And roughly, the metaphor the program used was actually, it was just outside here on the South Bank. Someone had a bag full of ping pong balls, 100 of them, marked from 1 to 100, representing £1 to £100. And he had people plunge their hands in and pick one out. But they were rigged. They were all at £20, you see. And they picked one out. Now, Then he got a bottle of champagne. He had a bottle of champagne and said, this is worth £20. How much would you give this to me? After they'd picked the £20 out, and they all said, oh, £10, £9, £11, something like that. And to back this up, it came essentially from a police officer in America following a murder suspect. And as he was running after him, he passed this act of police brutality on some innocent bystanders, and for which he was imprisoned, because no one could believe that he wouldn't have noticed this having passed by. So he did a test to show that when you have something on your mind, you can actually, although the thing's right in front of you, you can miss it. So he had people jogging, and then he'd already had a fight planned just off of the by the roadside. And the people who had jogged, I think only 25% of them noticed it. The other 75 hadn't noticed it. Then he took it a stage further with the people who do the who man the drones in Syria or wherever it is. And these are trained professionals. And the two assumptions, one was this group that was well-known terrorist organization, another were these fanatical amateurs that no one would take seriously. And he produced certain amounts of information, fed it in. And all the professionals came to the conclusion that who was the one guilty of this crime, theoretical crime, was the famous, the person who had done all the crimes that everyone pick on. The only person to go to the other one was the untrained person, because actually all the clues they gave were directly related to the untrained group. Because they had this preconceived idea, they'd missed it. And then they went even further to see if this was an inherent part of humanity, so to speak. It's part of our conditioning. And there's this island in Puerto Rico where these rhesus monkeys are sort of observed scientifically. And they had presented a similar thing with the monkeys. And sure enough, it turned out that they have a similar program, because had it not been, they'd say that it's something that's adaptable. But as a consequence of finding the same fallibility in the monkeys, they said that no, it's, we can't do anything about it. We're stuck with it, basically. So then the second part of the observation, which led to this economist finding these, this way of thinking, was he had the same bag of ping pong balls, only they marked 80 pounds, you see. And he again presented this bottle of champagne for sale. But before that, I missed a little bit out. Just before that, go back to that scene, and he had gave the person who was there, he said, here's £10. Now, here's a further £5. Now, you can bet for £10 instead of £5, but it's a 50-50 chance. And if you get it right, it's a flip of a coin. You can take the £20 away, or you're guaranteed the £15. Apparently, they all went for £15. Because when you're secure financially, you want to hold on to that and stay firm to it. Then with this 80, which they picked, he said, now estimate the price of the champagne. Oh, about £50, £60, something like that. And he did a similar thing, only inverted. I can't quite remember what it is. So he had, you have £20 that I'm going to give you, and I'm guaranteed £15. Guaranteed £15, but take the full £20. Are you willing to take a risk, sort of thing? So it's either 15 or 20. And they said, oh, we go for the risk. So when you're, it's called, I forget what it's, risk avoidance or something like that. But out of this, a whole new brand of behavioural economics sort of swarm, which was informing. So that was that. Now, how that this then bears on this idea of
what are you going to do for Christmas, Bob?
Going to Australia to visit my brother in Melbourne.
You're going to stay with your brother?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you been before?
Yeah, about 10 times. Yeah.
Really? Yeah. Okay. So what, at Christmas time?
No. I've been once before. Four years ago I went at Christmas time.
Right. And, okay.
I'm all geared up. Yeah. Actually, I've just been out to the Gallery of Everything.
And, what was the worst Christmas you ever had?
The worst? The loneliest. I can tell you the loneliest. I don't know if it's the worst.
Right.
I'm just trying to think if that was Christmas time. think it was, yeah. When I had my show in Australia...
Yeah.
When I had my show in Australia in 1984, I came to stay with my brother and my sister-in-law. Mm. And well, I'd come straight from California in a way on this diet, beans, peas, seeds, grains, leaves, roots, which I was, well, I don't know, it's about, I'd been back 3 or 4 years and I was holding on to this diet, which drove them bananas. And pretty soon they shipped me up to Gympie, 100 miles north, because they couldn't, although I had a show in Brisbane.
Yeah.
And this was halfway to Brisbane anyhow. No, it was north of Brisbane, actually. But they wanted me away. Mm. And
what did they, did you know they wanted you away?
Well, yeah, the vibes were sort of, they couldn't handle all the obsessive eating.
I see.
And now my brother's ended up as fat and smoking. And I'm laughing because I'm very fit.
Right.
Except I've got, what's that when deterioration, I've got it in my book.
Yeah.
It's when the backs of your eyes deteriorate and you can't...
not a cataract. Muscular something?
Muscular, that's the one, yeah. So I've got to go for the hospital for a...
Muscular degeneration.
Muscular degeneration. I've got that, apparently.
Right.
But a light case of it. They just need to check whether there's a fluid there or not. Which okay. would be more.
All right.
Back. Yeah. So, back in Australia, right?
Yeah.
I'm back up at Gympie, and I met a guy called Ken Dove, who's probably a born-again Christian.
Hmm.
And we what we have in common, that we get like regular phone calls about once a month or maybe once every 2 months. Yeah. And so we know who's calling whenever who's yeah. calling sort of thing. And that was my Christmas that year.
Yeah.
Out with the kangaroos in Gympie, Gold Rush.
But you were with this Ken Dove?
No, I lived on Obio. He's, I don't know, he was... There was a situation where I was doing portraits of local personalities, like the local radio station and various town celebrities.
So how did you choose that place?
They chose it for me. It came out of the show, actually.
Yeah.
This woman, Faith Devere, who was, a high-level politician only on a borough council of a tiny little town somewhere in nowhere.
Yeah.
But it's all high-pressure stuff.
Yeah.
And she had invited me out, I think. And
oh, she invited
Tom and,
you?
Yeah, I think 6 months. Tom and Bunty were rather relieved to get rid of me.
Right,
so.
Okay.
And there I was. And that stuck out at Christmas time, that was.
Right.
So I was...
Is that called the Outback? Is that like...
Not that, no. Kinkin would have been the Outback. Although I went to Kinkin, and they had one of these fights, throwing the mop... And the Abbos were throwing them, and there was a dance in the hall, which was open windows and corrugated iron roof, and then it was a rain shower, so there was this banging on the roof,
right.
And we did a dance where you twirl each other round,
right.
And various things. So I took part in a 5K run out at Kinkin, and that was. That's towards the Outback. So this is just by the north of the Gold Coast in Brisbane, by the Glasshouse Mountains, that kind of way.
But was it a lonely Christmas then?
It was, in as much as I was on my own. And as usual, my exhibition had sold, except a few to my brother and close relatives. And the gallery owner had said when he framed the pieces that he'd... he wouldn't buy the, he wouldn't insist that we buy the frames. And Tom said, well, I can't afford, I can't afford to buy them, so we'll have them without the frames, of which he took 75%. He sort of broke his thing, and then he ripped them out of the frames. So I had all of this, the show to take back to England, up in Australia 6 months afterwards. So that was my, that I put my life savings in and spent a year working on to prepare it.
Right.
It was my photorealism. It was before photorealism had hit Australia.
Yeah.
And earlier in 69, I came out with the first afro, although I was white.
Yeah.
They hadn't seen an afro before.
You had an afro?
I had an afro there because you do art school and that sort of thing at that time.
Well, you had your hair curled or...?
No, it's curly.
It was curly.
It is quite curly.
Yeah. It's white. You look quite Christmassy at the moment, actually.
Yeah, yes, a lot of people do mistake me. when they're not calling me Albert Einstein, they'll say, this is your time of year, old codger. Apart from that.
Right. So that sticks in your memory as being...
That's an outstandingly lonely Christmas, but though I probably had quite a few in when I was living in Hollywood for 10 years.
Okay.
I can't remember any of those because I don't have recall. No, not yet. I haven't sort of...
Why? Why?
Well, I don't have recall of much now that except that happened to me in childhood. And I don't tend to... Do you remember things that... happened to you?
Possibly not. No, I know what you mean.
Blur out of the memory.
I suppose they do, don't they?
Yeah.
So
this is back in 1972-82. It's quite a long time ago.
Yeah.
And it was pre my 30 years of psychosis, so I had that whole thunderstorm in between. So probably quite a lot of what's happened in terms of memory might have been partly obliterated, but I think it could be.
So do you have fond memories of Christmases when you were a child?
Exactly, yeah. They're the ones it's for everyone, universally, a happy time. Children adore Christmas. And I've got very specific memories of pretty much every Christmas.
Particular one, can you think?
Yeah, I remember we went round to Uncle Frank's and Auntie Mary was there, and little Frankie, who was fat, who turned out to look like a Greek god and gay when he was later, to everyone's surprise and everything. And he, Auntie Mary, I think Uncle Frank gave her some artificial pearls as a Christmas, and we were absolutely knocked out at the expense and the
where was this? Where was this?
Thatcham, which is just outside of Newbury. That was where they lived.
In Berkshire.
By the river Collet or something.
Okay.
And we went, we tried a little. Dad had made a speedboat thing out of Bluebird 2, it was out of balsa wood, and this little jet engine on the back, and we put it on the river.
Right.
Sannet, I think it's called. Yeah. And I remember.
Or is it Kennet?
Kennet.
It's Kennet.
I remember we had the radio on, it was Peter May was batting.
A sunny day.
No, this isn't Christmas. This is summertime. Yeah, I don't know why we went. This is the memory. Oh right, that's not Christmas, is it?
No,
that was another time we went to Uncle Frank's. Yeah.
Okay. I was trying to keep you on track on Christmas.
Hopeless. No chance.
It's difficult.
It's really difficult. Yeah. So anyhow, this is a big surprises program because I thought I was coming in. Have I done my rap? Yeah, I've done it.
So
that was the thing that I'd been invited, but I thought it was just a grief thing.
Right.
And you said to hang on because you thought it was an hour long. So I said, sure, but I've got to get back to the South Bank because I've got a duty at 6.
Right.
And I could do it, though. I think, to heck with everything. This is so much fun, and it's a great opportunity. I'm sorry, listeners, I haven't got records, but I haven't planned
that. I'm going to play some... music underneath. I'm going to sort of do it in such a
way. Okay, doctor.
I've got these things. I've got these singles called Mayu Muzak, which means is this somebody?
The door moved a little bit. It stopped.
They're sort of seagull muzak. It's called, and they're kind of odd. Sort of Christmas music.
Well, that'd be wonderful.
They're quite lilting. Something. I think they'll work quite well.
We'll get it. Okay. So if I take I don't think I'd be able to stop by the Tate Modern to get. I wanted the directions to this book, the ISBN number. Not to worry. When I was in my gallery and the show, somebody came and visited and invited me out to this private members bar, which is a sort of it's a development. Well, it's a sort of continuation of the Colony Club.
Yes.
They've got. Family links or something with all of that. They've opened the place. It's out on Prescott Street near the Tower of London.
Right.
Vootarinas.
Okay.
Do you know Slim Galliard?
I know the name.
He was a scat singer. His trio backed Charlie Parker back in the 40s.
Right.
And he came to live in England in the 80s. I think died here. He was a big figure. He had this beret and a beard.
Uh-huh.
And he was very... You'd have known him. He was a television personality. Anyhow, Vootarinas is the woman who's her companion, whoever it is, have opened this.
Yeah.
It's in a basement. It's tremendous.
Did you ever go to the original Colony Club?
No.
I did. I went there a few times. Yeah, it was on, I can't remember if it was Greek Street or Frith Street.
It was in Soho, wasn't it?
Yeah, and you kind of, it was just literally on Greek Street or Frith Street, I can't remember which one.
Yeah.
There was just a doorway, and you'd walk down a corridor, which my memory is that it was all painted dark green.
Mm.
And then you'd go up a flight of stairs, and then you had to ring a bell and somebody would sort of
look through
let
the thing.
You in or not.
Yeah.
And you were supposed to be a member.
Right.
But if they sort of thought you looked all right, or if it was...
It's a bit like this. Is
they'd
exactly
say,
the same.
Oh, come in.
Yeah, come yeah. in. And, all right, I'm a and, friend of.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's all right. Yeah.
And it was basically just a large room with these murals.
Yeah. Murals, it's exactly the same. It is an extension of it. Yeah.
And I think, what's the name of the artist? Michael Andrews, I think.
Yeah, did, he was one,
did,
yeah. He
did the murals.
Well, it is.
And everything was, it was all dark green, and this little bar in a corner.
That's it.
And I think originally, wasn't it someone called Muriel Belcher?
I don't know. I've got a book about it. She's given me a book.
Muriel and somebody, another woman, I think, ran it, who were obviously, you know, cohorts of Francis Bacon.
Yeah.
But I never went.
Syncopants.
And they'd go from the French, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
The French to the colony, and then they'd eat in Wheeler's on Old Compton Street, the Oyster Bar.
Oh, of course.
And things like that.
Yeah.
But yes.
Did it have a vibe? Did it have an ambience?
Definitely.
Because this place...
Yeah. And the guy, the barman, I can't use the word. They had this way of using obscenities to each other, which I can't say on air.
No, of course not.
But it begins with a C.
Yeah.
And they'd say, you know... so you, he'd call you that.
You see,
he'd
yes.
call you that, you know.
Yeah. And you say,
I can't say it
much.
On air. No, no. It was just all taken in good sort
so
of...
So you say it back to him, and it's...
And you expected to drink champagne, you know. It was like...
When I went in there, they said, you bought me a drink, you see.
Yeah.
And then the second time I went there, I went to buy my... No. We buy the drinks for you somehow.
Right.
I've arrived, isn't it? And then last week, I think it was, last time I went, because I stay, when I'm working, I work at the South Bank, and there's a hostel called Wombats, which is on Dock Street, which is just around the corner from there.
Right.
So I can go there.
Oh, Dock Street?
Yeah.
What, near Tower Bridge?
Yeah.
Yes, my friend Hugh used to live in that hostel. Yeah. Seaman's Hostel.
No, now it's an Australian run. It's called Wasabout.
Is it?
It's ever so good, actually.
Oh,
it's really good.
Well, yeah.
So I go around there just after I stop by. I've finished my duty at the South End, and I've been around there two or three times. Last time I went there, because I was staying at the Wombats, I went in and it was, I forget who it was anyhow. There was this minor celebrity talking and playing, saying about his history in movies and also playing some of his pop songs. And as I walked in, he said, "Oh, look who's just walked in, Bob Parks." That's it. You see, that status there.
Right.
And apparently, when I did my performathon the first week of the show, I'd done his portrait.
Okay.
So he said that. So I thought, well, that's definitely a sign of having arrived, getting called.
Recognition.
Recognition. And so that was terrific. Anyhow, it's a perfect ambience for my group.
Oh, yes.
Parks and the recreational. So
right.
It's a step up. Well, not a step up, a development from our resonance fundraising experience. And now I've contacted there. Morris was introduced to me, who was a seminal figure in the punk rock movement. And he knows all the people like, I can't remember, Johnny Moped and... Incendiary Device. I can't use that. I can't describe the lyrics for the similar reason you've outlined before.
Right.
But all those people.
So, anyhow, are they recreating the colony then? Is that the idea?
I think it's as though it never closed, and this is the way it would be had it not have closed, sort of thing.
Right,
so, the vibes are the same, but I suppose this is 20 years on or 30 years
on. And will it be permanently open, or is it like an exhibition, just for a temporary exhibition?
No, it's permanent site, yeah. It seems to be open in the evenings more than during the daytime, which I think perhaps would reflect the colony. It doesn't open much later than 11, though, because I've been there and it's been closed.
Okay.
So, it's not quite the same, but I think they're getting their footing in, you know.
Right.
They're trying to attract people like me, I guess.
Yeah,
artists and things like that.
Yeah,
and that's really how they want to colonize. Yeah, eccentrics.
Yeah,
in that cases, yeah. Albert Einstein and Father Christmas in one sort of thing. Yeah. I was in now the other one. We've got this conceptual art group with Chalk, Winky, Wainy, and Val.
Right.
That's Chalk, Wainy, Winky and Val.
Is Chalk the harmonica player?
Yeah. Chalk, Mr. Chalk, he has this shoe shop, which is one of the leading. They make handmade shoes, English men, sort of thing. And it's just off of Oxford Street.
Right.
So I usually stop by there.
Right.
And I can't remember why I brought that up, but it's something with, I've invited him to come tonight.
Right. Now, it was your conceptual group, you said?
Yeah, it was a conceptual group.
Right.
And... both two of whom were born on Canvey Island, which is the selling point, which is
right.
Thing. And anyhow, so we have a sort of meeting before I go to Australia tonight there. I think two of them could come. I've totally forgotten why I said that, sorry. But it, oh, gosh, all right.
Do you want to sing a Christmas carol?
All right. There's that punk rock, isn't it? The one, you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Shall I go?
Yeah.
Silent night, holy night. That was...
Right.
Yeah,
is that it?
Well, you go on, and you went back in such horror and shock. That,
well, it was so loud.
Well, that's you said, I said it is all right. I said... I could do the whole thing if you like.
Is that a punk version of Silent Night?
Yeah, it was the Rotters or something in Los Angeles, punk group in 77. Oh, that was another Christmas. It came out at the Christmas time, so okay. That was a... Yeah. I remember playing that on coloured vinyl.
So you're going to buy your brother a present?
Present, yeah. I've got a present for his lady friend who's from Mauritius.
Okay.
Cost me £60.
Right.
No, there's two. The first one is... oh, Christ, I can't remember. It's a certain rum that's made in Mauritius, and it's spiced rum. So I've got... And there was one shop in Soho and one other shop in London that sell it, and I managed to get that at £22 or £3. And this book I bought just come in... well, they were searching, because when Foyles moved, a lot of their books were recategorised, and they couldn't find it. But I just got this call yesterday saying that the book... Shall I... I'll get it out of the bag. Hang on, you just talk to them a bit while I look.
Where's your bag? All right, OK. Right. This is you're listening to a Wavelength Christmas special with Bob Parks on Resonance 104.4 FM. Bob is rummaging in his bag and producing a book from a Foyles bag.
Got it. Okay. It's called The Franco-Mauritian Elite: Power and Anxiety in the Face of Change. So I thought you might be interested in that.
Okay.
There's a black...
And that's that wasn't £60.
Yeah.
Sure. Was it? Was it one of those university press things?
Yeah, probably so. Yeah.
All right.
But it's it might be privileged knowledge.
Leave the price on it.
There's no price on it.
There's no price on it. We'll leave the receipt inside there.
Yeah. Right.
Otherwise, you'll never know.
Yeah. Push it home, sort of thing. For the
some guy. Well, it seems a shame to give a book away if costing that much. If they don't know how much
and
it costs.
Not only that, having not made any money from the show, I'm going out spending.
All right.
Because what happened was I thought, you know, at least I'd sell some.
Yeah.
But having... I spend into the savings a little bit. And I got... This is might be of interest to you.
Hmm.
Who... I'd, well, more than anything, I could easily have ended up in obscurity. I'd have been totally happy having done that. Because you neither would have discovered me for Ravelinks so many years ago, had it not been for the LP... which you happened to buy, was produced by Nathaniel Mellors, who discovered me when I was in Sway in this village, through Art Sway. He was an artist in residence there.
But wasn't it through Robin Klasnick?
Robin Klasnick knew me at the Leicester College of Art, because when I came there, having just left Chelsea School of Art and decided to go avant-garde, here's this character, this is in 1966, digging holes in the name of art all around the outside, and no one was doing that at that time, which apparently impressed him. And so when I left later on, when he moved down then to London and many years later I opened Matt's, he remembered me and he calls me Genius Bob, you see.
Yeah.
But he's totally exhibitable, and he one of his artists was then Nathaniel Mellors, and Artsway opened by Linda, who, when my brother had this nervous breakdown many years before that, had met her in the hospital in Islington, I don't know where it was, wherever it was, and she then had was living in this village where I was the postman, and I'd recognised her just by sheer coincidence or happenstance, whatever it is. And when she left, retired from teaching, she raised £500,000 for the National Lottery and opened Art Sway. And then he was then put forward as an artist in residence in Nathaniel Mellors. And as Robin knew, I'd studied with Strasbourg and he was making films. I ended up in this tree, hanging in this tree, telling Nathaniel that, come around and see my bungalow, it's full of art. Which he did, and he was knocked out by it. And as a consequence, well, yeah, what happened there, one of the sort of pivotal pieces, which was was in the show, Mum on the Cross, which, because of 30 years of murderous screaming 25-hour psychotic rages, on which she was the receiving end, which she took with her to death, which was an agreement before, I thought a good thing to stick her on the cross, you see, as a model for Christ. And that was the piece that Nathaniel exhibited in his first retrospective at the ICA, and one of the three dominant influences, you see, and it looked really good there. And so he then wanted to buy it from that point onwards. And then subsequently had sort of, I said, how much? I said, well, before that, the producer of the film, Tommy, had said, I'm going to make you a reasonable offer, you know, a good offer on a painting.
Right.
You know, not a thing like, you know, real. So, you know, one that, you, I forget the word he used now, but anyway, it got me going, oh, right. So how much do I want? About £5,000 I want for this, which is 6 months' work, which is only half of minimum wage if you work on it yearly. So it's not that much. And I, his face went blue. So I said, what about £500? And he said, oh, that's more like it. So here I am, selling a significant piece of my, I guess, bank balance in a way. And I, well, I used that to buy...
So this is a depiction of your mother on a cross?
No, this is before that. This is a self-portrait that I did. But it's another quite good piece, seminal piece.
Right.
And I used it to buy chisels from Taranti. And now I've got this, like, two pieces of two-ton oak that I plan to carve an angel. They're in the driveway at home with these. So I've used it, despite the fact that
well,
I was...
Well, this leads nicely into the Christmas theme, you see.
Absolutely.
You're going to you've got your mother on a cross, and you're going to carve angels out of pieces of oak. So
hold those two thoughts in mind. You bring them back again. And, but anyway, with this on the cross and mum carving... What were you talking about?
No, you said you were talking about having got chisels from Taranti.
Yeah, I know, I got that.
You were carving angels.
He made a decent offer. But anyhow, Nathaniel, I thought, well, I went £4,000 for Mum on the cross. He said, yeah, all right. And now, with this show, apparently James, who, he is the idea behind this called the place called the Museum of Everything. And they basically have a very big backlog of, or a big... they own a lot of outsider art, and they exhibit all over the world. This is the way it functions. I think one they had in Moscow, and they've done various places over the world, and now they've got a big show in Tasmania. So I'm going to go visit it when I go to visit my brother in Melbourne.
Right.
Now, he... Oh, because you know the way these things are set up, I don't know. He apparently offered me £5,000 for it. Well, Nathaniel, because he... saved my life, basically. I mean, had it not been for him, I'd still be obscure, and well, I'd still be the same. I wouldn't have changed, but yeah, certain degree of hiring the my profile of self confidence, and as a consequence, I said, well, I owe him, kind of thing. And Nathaniel has said, well, if James offers you significantly more, like double or triple, then sure, go, you know, sell it to him, but not. It was like kind of an insult, £5,000. And he hit the roof because George Orr had also had a... partly they featured my art at the Gallery of Everything. And this is during Frieze. And George Orr during the Frieze. And Nathaniel wanted to bid on some of those.
Right.
He wanted one because he loves him, because he was like the founder of abstract expressionism, according to Rauschenberg, from Biloxi...
Who was?
George Orr. He's a potter who, it's a long story. Anyhow, they had a good representation of his pottery. And Nathaniel was rather pissed. Can I use that word? Pissed
Not off. Really. It's too
upset.
Late
now. No, I didn't use that.
No.
Extremely upset about, rather over, more than, slightly over concern about not getting necessarily the deal he might, having introduced me, had it not been for the film. James wouldn't have wanted to have me on,
is that right?
On the show. Yeah.
Okay.
And so both that, and then when I told him, because I'd already said, because I hadn't just sold a lot through the show, and I thought, well, I'd better regain a bit of my lost capital. I'll sell this to him. And it was all ready to go through when Gabriella, who was the director of the Gallery of Everything, said, no, James wants to buy it, and so on. So it got complicated. Like, it's starting to get too complicated for me to deal with, never having been not middle class, because I'm not middle class. I don't know how to deal with money. I haven't got a clue how to you know, how to manipulate it and use it to it's just money as far as I'm concerned, and are people, and money is money, but it's only worth as much as, you know, £1 is £1.
Yeah.
interest is someone's idea. It's a fiduciary issue, but right. It's nothing to do with what people are or what money is. Money is like literally what it is. Mm. So that's very much a working class attitude to it. Mm. But the middle class is, no, invest it.
Right.
Get more money for doing nothing, basically sitting on your backside and let the money... I don't want... And I probably could develop a prowess in that area, but it's not something that would attract me. Apparently, it's one that's attracted the whole brand of Damien Hirst & Co, because most of their art seems to be about dissing money. Mm. But I personally wouldn't use it as a focus, because I think I'm not vaguely interested in it. But I've got to develop a certain interest, apparently, to be his wife.
Have you been to the... You sing with the gospel choir sometimes, don't you?
Yeah.
Up in Tottenham?
Tottenham, Luton, it was originally. It was originally Tottenham, actually. And then when Bishop Bell died, the new bishop, presiding bishop, was up in Luton. Right. So we
Have
used
you
to meet
been
up
there recently? Or?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Also, better than that, which was very good, there's two things that came out of the show. Well, one thing and a half a thing that's still on board, for which they've got an Arts Council grant, which is now being modified. So, again, it's all kind of in the air. But the initial thing, I wanted to get a 600-piece gospel choir in Chilton Street, is it?
Chilton Street.
So filling the street. And they got a council acceptance and all that kind of stuff. But for I don't know what the reasons was. They decided to... I know, because it was too short. Nicholas, Nicky Brown, who's the contact in England for gospel music, who worked with Sister Carol Thompson, up in... she's married... To Durrell, up in Luton, who runs a workshop choir, who we got back in. I got actually backing from Telebass at the Barbican.
Right.
So about 10 years ago now. Yeah. Now, Nicky had, I'd got a commission, £2,000 I'd put aside. Ivan Moody had taken the commission because I'd done this big encaustic of the crucifixion.
Right.
13 foot by 7 foot 6. And no one was interested in it except for this, for Ivan Moody, who also was an Orthodox, Greek Orthodox priest. But he was also an avant-garde composer of quite a high profile. But he liked it being sort of, I guess it's the iconic thing quality to it, static quality. And he agreed on the commission, but it didn't develop because it was over 6 or 7 years and I was working on the Sinfonietta to get them doing it, but I had to set the whole thing up. And then this idea with the 600 piece gospel choir, then the idea of a combined one, then the idea of a council a grant for Nicky's one, working, and then I told Ivan after I'd made the movie, because I was on a kind of a high, the actual ending, and I'd planned for the movie,
right.
Which he thought was most blasphemous, and I could see a psychotherapist.
Right.
So it sort of ended that.
Yes, we better not describe that. I remember the scene.
Yeah. And I won't go into it. No, you remember it. And anyhow, so at that point,
are you going to, at this point, because we're getting towards the end, are you going to, do you celebrate Christmas, or are you, what's your attitude to Christmas?
Yeah. Well, that's back to childhood, isn't it? And we used to.
But the religious side of it, do you have any opinion on that or view?
Well, we did the carols with the choir.
Yeah.
And I'm doing the thing on Sunday at the... Yeah. Do I believe?
Yeah.
I'm an agnostic, really, I think.
Are you?
Yeah.
Because you have various sort of hats, don't you?
I love the music. I love the Christian music. It's fantastic. And plain chant particularly is wildly. So I remember the only... All right, this is a metaphor I can use. I went... When we were at art school, we went to the Italian tour... In Arezzo, in front of the altarpiece by Piero, I got down on my knees and said, believe in you, Jesus. It was so good, the art, that it convinced me. But up to that point, the word...
This is Piero della Francesca.
Francesca.
In where?
Arezzo.
Right, okay.
There's Masaccio in Florence and Piero in Arezzo. The big altarpiece there.
Right.
There's a bit of Masaccio as well there, but it's mainly Piero.
Okay.
And Giotto, of course, in the Scriveni Chapel.
Moved you in front of this painting?
I can believe in art. Because it was art that brought me into connection with spirituality in the first place.
Right.
I went to the Tate Gallery when I was at school on my own. Well, initial prod from the art teacher, but not directly there. And then after I found that, I never stopped going, and that was when the whole thing opened up for me, really. Right. So I link art with spirituality, and I guess I don't really think religion's got much to do with spirituality, but it claims to. Mm. And in as much as it claims to, I like that whole thing. And okay. Christ was a great person, and sort of good anyhow. But I've just started questioning love, actually, because people seem to take quests for granted. I say, well, you know, who came up with this idea? You know, not too sure about it now. But, so anyhow, in that respect, I do, and I particularly like Russian Orthodox music, but most of all, gospel music is traditional at Christmas time. Black Nativity. Yeah. So when that came to London in the late 50s, early 60s, that it was where white people had got up and were actually clapping, and the black Alex Bradford was going, and God wants you and you. Mm. It broke down the barriers. And Marianne Williams with the Stars of Faith did the "oh", and that gave Little Richard his "oh", which gave the Beatles their "oh". It was passed on, kind of thing. Right. So that's where it came from originally.
Brilliant.
So in that sense, I'm religious and a Christian as well. More through the image rather than through the word.
Okay. Well, that's probably a great point at which to end.
Okay.
Thank you very much to Bob Parks for the Wavelength Christmas special.
Time.
This program has been brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you liked what you heard and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.